evening, and welcome to the Diz Dads podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Rittmaster, and with me tonight on episode 65 are Chris Carroll.
Hey, Aaron.
And Eric Anderson.
Good evening.
And tonight, we're going to be talking about dining values at Walt Disney World. We're talking here not necessarily about the best food in the parks, not necessarily the cheapest, but the opportunities to get the best value for your dining dollar at Walt Disney World. Before we get into talking about that too much, I do want to once again thank our podcast sponsor, Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. They were a huge help on our recent Diz Dads convention, really made it all possible, and we appreciate it a lot, and we appreciate what they've been doing to help make our community possible as well. So thanks, Suzanne and Fairy Tale Journeys. So guys, tonight we're talking about value, and you know, it's a little tricky because there are a couple of different ways to look at value when you're talking about dining at Walt Disney World, right?
Are you referring to the dining plan versus the out-of-pocket expenses?
Well, exactly. I mean, that's the big question you've got to ask before you can even talk about what's a good value. Because if you're on the dining plan, you're already paying a fixed price. So it's really kind of about maximizing what you get out of the plan. But then on the other hand, if you're paying in cash, you know, you're looking for a good dining experience without spending as much money.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail right on the head, Aaron. That I think it's we've done the dining plan discussion before here, so I think it'd be nice to talk about what getting a value out of a particular restaurant in terms of money, in terms of experience, rather than talking about how much you can get for one credit.
Exactly. I mean, you know, we all know if you're on the dining plan and what you're really concerned about is maximizing your return on the investment in the dining plan, then, you know, order the steak, look for the combo meals, and you'll max yourself out. But again, here we really want to look at something a little different, and I'll start us off here. You know, when you're not on the dining plan, and you're going to do a character meal, for example, it was surprising to me to see, you know, just how much variation there is in the cost for a relatively similar meal. The least expensive character breakfasts can be had for just over $20 per adult. On the other hand, Cinderella's Royal Table is more than twice what the least expensive options would be. And so there's a lot to, you know, work through there. I think that the one that jumped out to me was one that we just got to experience this last trip, the Best Friends Breakfast at Ohana, which is a great deal at $21 per adult, $12 per child. And you get a meal that is served family style. And one of the things that you know, always kind of bugged me about character meals is that whole game of hide and seek you play with, okay, is the next character coming out? Can I get up and get some more bacon? And at Ohana, you just don't have to play that game. They bring you the plate of bacon, you know, and they'll keep bringing it and filling it.
Yeah.
I think and the dollar amount makes it a great value.
Right. And I think when you're talking value, too, you also have to consider what the experience, not just about the money, but the experience.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, something like, for example, Tusker House in Animal Kingdom, I think that's $27 or something around that for lunch when we did our research for this. But, you know, you get, and, you know, about half that for kids, but you get a really great experience there. You get the five big characters, you know, and they all come around to your table. The food is really good, and it's just a nice experience. So I would give that high value. And similarly, although, you know, it's very difficult to talk your daughter out of going to Cinderella's Castle at least once when she's a little girl, I think a better value is Askershoosh. You have more interaction with the princesses. It seems more relaxed and more more of a fun experience to me than Cinderella's Castle is.
Yeah, well, you know, Acres House has the advantage of space. I think you don't feel quite so crowded, and that makes a big difference when you've got, you know, these princess characters coming from table to table. You know, you don't feel like they're rushing past you to get to the person next to you.
Right.
How about you, Eric? Do you have a particular favorite character meal value?
Well, you've taken some of my favorites right there. We have moved with, you know, two young daughters. We have moved from going to the castle to see the princesses over to Norway in Epcot for the Princess Storybook Breakfast normally. And I think it just has it all over Cinderella's Royal Table, except for that location in the castle. It's like real estate. It's location, location, location. But they certainly charge you for that location.
Yes.
You know, if you've got younger kids, one of the nice bargains that I found for character meals was Crystal Palace in the Magic Kingdom. We took our daughters there when they were a lot younger. They got to see the Winnie the Pooh characters, which are, you know, cute and maybe a little more accessible to the younger set. And the price point is good, and the food is good there. If you don't have breakfast there, it also gets you into the park prior to rope drop, if that's something you're interested in.
Yeah, and even if you're not, I totally agree with getting into the park as well. That is an experience that the kids don't always appreciate, but boy, it's a great thing as an adult to go in and see that park empty, and really you can see some of the details that you just miss when there's so many people there.
Well, and you also get some unique photo opportunities. I mean, you know, how often can you really take a picture right in front of the partner statue, you know, without having to do it in the midst of a crowd of people?
Right, right.
You know, or...
Those iconic photos.
Exactly, exactly.
Can't get anywhere else. Yeah, absolutely.
And we're not talking about a small difference. I mean, you know, there are basically two restaurants that can get you into the Magic Kingdom, you know, before the park opens: Cinderella's Royal Table and Crystal Palace. And, you know, per kid, Crystal Palace is half of the cost.
Yeah.
Or very close to that. I mean, the numbers I looked at had Crystal Palace at 15 per kid for breakfast, and Cinderella's Royal Table at 28.
Right. And it used to be, not when when my kids were a little younger, it was generally impossible to get a reservation at Cinderella's Castle too. It's gotten significantly easier now that they've made you put down credit cards. But prior to that, it was very, very difficult to get reservations there too. So that's another challenge.
It is. It is. And it's nice that there's another option that gets you into the park early. You know, another one that, you know, I think people don't think about so often, and so I'll just mention it, is if you're looking for a less expensive option on the Epcot side, you know, Akershus is the only breakfast meal, I think, in the park. You'll correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think Garden Grill does breakfast.
No, I think you're right.
But just outside Epcot, in the Beach Club, there is a character breakfast at Cape May Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's, again, you know, Akershus is about $38 a person. Cape May is $27 per adult. $32 per kid at Akershus, $13 a kid at Cape May. Now, that's a very different experience. Right. So you're not really comparing apples there. But if what you're looking for is a character experience and then you're going to be in Epcot for the day, you know, that's something to think about. You've got some of your more classic characters at Cape May, or the princesses inside in Akershus.
Yeah. And another great experience that we haven't talked about is the 1900 Park Fair experience at, the Grand Floridian. That is a great thing. At dinner time, you have to go outside you have to go outside the park. But, you know, the interacting with the stepsisters is something that you really don't get to do very often, although I think now they're stationed more and more outside the castle. but it's really a fun experience to get to do. And for breakfast, they have the Mad Hatter there, I think.
Yeah, breakfast is Alice and the Mad Hatter and usually Mary Poppins.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about it is that it's a high energy breakfast. I mean, I think that sometimes you've got to know your kids, and there are right. some kids that sitting at their table waiting for a character to come around.
It can be torture sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that 1900 Park Fair, they're getting a different experience. I mean, there's right. more of
you also have to know your kid too. 1900 Park Fair, none of those characters are masked. They're right. all real people. So for kids that are afraid of masked characters, and I know there are a lot of kids out there, fortunately mine were not, it can be less intimidating to have a real person talking
That's true.
To you as opposed to a masked character.
Yeah. There's an entertainment value there too. There's, you know, you've got the Mad Hatter providing that sort of Looney Tunes atmosphere at breakfast, and then the stepsisters at dinner.
Right.
And in either case,
tunes too.
Yeah. And in either case, you're looking again at one of the least expensive character meals on property. $21 per adult, $12 per child at breakfast. You probably steps up about, $5 per meal, lunch and dinner. I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but in any case, I think those definitely, represent a good value. Now, one thing I think we should remember to talk about when we talk about value, one of the things about Akershus that sometimes you forget is that meal is expensive. But it includes that picture that you take with Belle on the way in. And most of the character meals, that's not included in the price of the meal.
Right.
So there is some value in the fact that you get that photo package included.
Yeah, that's not to be underestimated. It's nice to not have to spend that $27, $28, however much that usually is.
Right.
Are we ready to move off character meals? Or
I think we are. Let's talk about some other dining values, and maybe we should move to other table service meals that are not necessarily character meals.
Right. One of my favorite restaurants, and this is a little far away for people, but is at Animal Kingdom Lodge, the Boma restaurant has some fabulous food. It's not a character meal. But it's a buffet. It's not that expensive. It's a little further away, but the food is delicious and a little different than what you normally get in Disney World. It's just a little bit different flavors than we're used to getting.
Well, and that's a good point. Is that there's a certain value in uniqueness. There's a value in getting to experience something that you wouldn't experience at home.
Right. Right. And the people are very nice. They're all from the regions that they're cooking from, and they're all perfectly happy to talk to you about their food. And it's a nice restaurant. I enjoy it thoroughly.
How about you, Eric? You have a table service restaurant value you want to share?
Well, I was going to suggest, again, over at the Animal Kingdom Lodge, we're on the Kidani Village side. Sanaa puts out some really good food. They are not the cheapest, but they are unusual at Disney because over the course of their existence, they have actually added food items to the menu that are spicier than what they had before. So their trajectory isn't the usual sort of moving down the flavor vacuum.
It's sort of double opposite, because not only did their menu get larger, but it got larger and got spicier. It's usually the opposite.
You've got a great experience over there with being able to see the animals outside at lunch. It's a great place for lunch or dinner, but at lunch you get the added bonus of a lot of daylight to see the animals outside. And they also have the best bathrooms on property outside of Sanaa, just as an added bonus.
I'm sure Zerf would love that.
Yeah, Dave, we've got an assignment for you.
Yeah, there you go.
One other thing before we leave Animal Kingdom Lodge, something that is an incredible bargain because it is free is the culinary tour of Africa that they run out of Boma and Jiko every day at about 4 o'clock, where you can take a tour through Boma and through Jiko. In Boma, you can sample one of the soups and one of the desserts that are on the buffet. And over in Jiko, you can sample the Taste of Africa sort of breads and dips appetizer. So I highly recommend it. If you find yourselves over in the area, especially if you're just wondering if you would like the food over at the Animal Kingdom Lodge, this is a good way to try some of it out. And also to have a light snack.
Yeah, we stayed there once, and that was a great experience. Before we leave Animal Kingdom, I'd like to say a place that's not a good value, in my opinion, and that's Jiko. I don't know if you had that same experience, Eric, but we ate there, and the food was not the service was bad. The food wasn't particularly good. It was very overpriced. It's a 2-table service meal. Plus, it's very overpriced if you weren't paying through the dining plan. But we just did not enjoy that restaurant at all, and I would really avoid it, especially with Sanaa and Boma there.
Yeah, you know, one of the things about Disney World restaurants in general, too, is that they all seem to kind of go in cycles. And so you had a while there where, you know, Jiko is sort of a crown jewel of Disney dining. And I'm hearing more, you know, uneven reports. We'll see more, you know, another year or two, another chef will rotate in, and it may be completely different. But it's important to try to kind of get recent, opinions if you're looking for reviews for just that reason.
Yeah, that's a good point. We were there last April, and that was our experience. So it's a little bit, it's, you know, almost a year ago now, so could have gotten better.
I will say that I for a signature restaurant, I don't think it's overpriced. Just looking at a breakdown, it comes in around an average of about $37 per entree, and that's pretty much in line. It looks like everything's running between $34 and $40 average, with Narcoozie's being a bit of an outlier. It's up around $45 per entree. Just look at the average entree price. So, it may not be everybody's cup of tea, definitely, but I think the prices are pretty much in line with what Disney's charging at the other signatures.
Yeah, I think it was more that the price for what we were getting, that it was not a good value for what we were what we got.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that can be a real challenge because the signature restaurants are more expensive, and so it takes a little more effort to find a good value out of those restaurants that, if you're on the dining plan, are going to cost you 2 table credits or are going to be, you know, your entrees are probably going to be $10 to $15 more expensive, you know, per person. Then they might be in another table service restaurant. You know, I think we tend to be a little harsher in our judgment of a restaurant that holds itself out as being a higher end experience.
Right. And I think this goes back to, again, what you were saying about the difference between paying out of pocket and paying via the dining plan. Narcoozie's, if you're paying out of pocket, is one of the most expensive places you're going to be able to eat in Walt Disney World. But on the dining plan, it's going to be 2 credits, just like every other signature restaurant. So
right.
If you eat there on the dining plan, it looks like a better bargain than if you're paying out of pocket. And
yeah,
it's opposite for somewhere like Artist Point, where the average price for entree is around $10 less than at Narcoozie's. So,
right. But so, at Narcoozie's, you're paying for that view, and especially a great place to watch the fireworks and lobster.
Well, and actually, I'm glad you mentioned Artist Point, because that's sort of a good example of a restaurant that's on the flip side of what Chris was talking about with Jiko. You know, Artist Point is a restaurant that took some pretty heavy criticism for several years. And, you know, what I'm hearing now from people is much more positive, that the Artist Point has really turned the corner. It's gotten much better. It's the signature dining restaurant at Wilderness Lodge. And again, it's got some unique offerings, that reflect its theme well. You know, you've got the bison steak that's on the menu. You've got the, cedar plank, salmon that's on the menu. And so it reflects the Pacific Northwest like the lodge. And as Eric was just saying, you know, the price point, if you're paying out of pocket, is really pretty reasonable for the atmosphere of a signature restaurant.
Yeah. And my family is a bit of I have some foodies in my family. And I got to say that we were thrilled with Artist Point last April when we were there. Not just great sounding things, but they were all cooked perfectly. So just really great tasting food.
All right. Well, I want to shift gears a little bit and talk for a minute about counter service experiences, because, you know, as much as we talk all the time about table service meals, for most of us, at least half of our meals at Walt Disney World are counter service meals. And although the cost overall is obviously lower per meal, there's still some pretty good variation there between, you know, the good values and the, you know, sadly overpriced burger with too much stuff piled on top of it,
mm-hmm.
if I may characterize it that way. And you know, I guess I'll take the first stab, and, you know, I'm going to mention an item that's not even necessarily particularly inexpensive, but I think is a great value, and that's the falafel plate at Tangerine Cafe. It's about $9, but you get, you know, a really nice big overstuffed falafel and two sides that come with it, and all of it is excellent. You know, the shawarma platters are more expensive. They're about $3 or $4 more, you know, per item. So you're paying, you know, $12, whatever. Now it's starting to look like a not such a good deal. But that falafel plate, you know, we just ate it a couple weeks ago, you know, our last night at the convention, and I was really impressed.
Yeah, it's delicious there. Also in Epcot, this is actually sitting down, but we'd never eaten there before. Nine Dragons. I don't know if you've eaten there before, but the food was relatively inexpensive, and I think people mostly skip over it because they think, oh, well, I get Chinese food at home, but really very good. And a fair amount of food for what you're paying for.
That's nice to hear, because Nine Dragons was one that was getting pummeled there for several years.
Yeah, I know that. And you almost always can still walk in to Nine Dragons, because that's what I did before. I just walked in and we ate there, and the food was good. The food was delicious.
So, you have any counter service value examples for us?
At Epcot, I like the electric umbrella. I know for a while there it was a lot of chicken tenders and overstuffed cheeseburgers, but I had a salad there not too long ago. I think it was I don't have the menu in front of me, but I think it was like an Asian type salad with chicken on it that was surprisingly good. I expected something out of an airport type food, but I was pleasantly surprised at how good it was.
How about you, Eric?
Let's see, for counter service, I've got to first of all hold up the sort of the golden ticket. If you're on the dining plan, is to go over to Wolfgang Puck Express at Downtown Disney, and for one counter service credit, you can eat bacon wrapped meatloaf. And it really doesn't get any better than that.
No, and it's
a giant portion, and very tasty. As I said, it's got bacon around it, so you really can't go wrong.
No, and
really,
it's
wrapped meatloaf. You can't go wrong with that.
And it's a great value on the dining plan. I would argue that it's really not even a bad deal, you know, paying out of pocket.
No, it's not.
You know, we ate there our first night at Walt Disney World on our arrival day, you know, just a couple weeks ago. And I think we, you know, spent less than $50 for the four of us. And, you know, my wife had a glass of wine with her dinner. You know, everybody ate, was full. I couldn't have spent, you know, couldn't have gotten out of a restaurant serving me, you know, food that was not as good here locally for less than $50. So I could, you know, seemed to me to be a surprisingly good deal, even paying cash.
Moving over to Magic Kingdom, of course, one of my favorite quick service restaurants is the Sleeping Hollow and their chicken waffle sandwich, which is just fabulous.
Yes.
I have to throw that in there.
I'm a big fan. Another value in the Magic Kingdom, you know, it takes a bad rap sometimes, but I got to say that taco salad at Pecos Bill, it's hard to beat. I mean, you know, it's what, $8.50 or so? You make fun of it because when you go through the line, what you end up with is, you know, a taco shell bowl full of meat.
Right.
But that Fixin's Bar has everything you could want on a taco salad. You get to put it on yourself. You choose what proportions you want various things in, you know, mixed in with your taco salad. And I think that having that amount of control over it and not spending a whole lot of money on it, you know, it's a good value.
Yeah, and most kids lead a taco. It's a lot of food for that price, certainly.
Well, and it's one of those things that's certainly enough often for an adult and a child to share.
Yeah, that's true. You're absolutely right.
It's the IKEA of quick service. You put it together yourself, but it is pretty cheap.
Yeah, but you don't have to read the instructions in Swedish, so.
and you don't need an Allen wrench. That's true.
All right. So, anybody else have any other counter service deals?
Well, we don't want to forget our favorite in the Animal Kingdom.
I'm glad you mentioned it. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I know that's your favorite restaurant in practically the whole park. So
I love it. I like the food a lot. But you know, one of the sort of hidden gems of Flame Tree Barbecue is the fruit plate. You know, yeah, they have this great, it's like a quarter of a pineapple, you know, with a bunch of other fresh fruit on the plate. It's $7.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a really great deal. Yeah, good fresh
it's
fruit.
Certainly a better deal than the key lime cheesecake, which is awesome, but is, you know, $4.50 or something, which is what I had for dessert last time I was there.
Yeah. And, you know, when it's Animal Kingdom hot, sometimes, you know, a fruit plate is plenty for lunch. You know, I'm going to probably get the chicken and ribs anyway, cause you know, I'm me. But my wife's not wrong when she orders the fruit plate. It really probably is more appropriate on some of those days.
Right.
All right. Well, before we leave behind counter service, anybody else have a counter service they want to make sure we don't forget?
Boy, we've just been avoiding Hollywood Studios, haven't we?
You know, the studios.
I don't like the dining at the studios.
Yeah, it's just a hard sell.
It's just that I know people. I've tried them all. We've tried the Sci-Fi Cafe. The food wasn't very good, and I didn't like not being able to see the people I was eating with. The 50s cafe, that just rubbed me the wrong way. I know it's supposed to be funny, but, you know, it just misses most of the time. You know, the Brown Derby, is the food is good, but it's really expensive. So, you know, anything but lunch is not that great of a value. And Mama Melrose, I told this story at the convention. Last time I was at Mama Melrose, another dad and I, we went out to one of the snack areas and got food and drinks for our kids and brought them back because we were waiting so long for our food. Oh. So, you know, just the service there is really bad.
Awful. Yeah, I mean, the closest thing I think I could call to a value at Hollywood Studios is probably Backlot Express. And I say that primarily because, you know, it's relatively comfortable for a counter service. There's, you know, ample space. It's kind of spread out. It's interesting to look at. So it's an interesting experience because you've got, you know, the prop stuff all around you. The meals are you know, big portions. So it's easy to share and that can make for a good deal. It just seems to me like, you know, Hollywood Studios' answer to almost any question when it comes to counter service food is to, you know, toss something on top of it. So instead of just having a cheeseburger, it's a cheeseburger with onion rings tossed on top of it. Yeah. Instead of just having a hot dog, it's a hot dog with, you know, chili tossed on top of it.
It just seems very hastily thrown together.
Yeah, it feels like carnival food.
Right, right. I mean, I think that you know, Hollywood Studios is not my favorite park. It's probably my least favorite park, but just so much of that park needs to be revised. I know we tore that apart in our Blue Sky podcast.
See, the challenge for us is that we love the park. We just have a hard time finding a place to eat.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan, but maybe with Cars Land, I'll
if
yeah,
we'll see.
In defense of Hollywood Studios, you can get your you know, chicken and ribs plate over at Fairfax Fair. It is, however, more expensive there than it is in the Animal Kingdom at Flame Tree, but they do have you know, some offerings there that are a little more along the lines of what you see other places.
That's true. There are some isolated places where you can find it. It just, I don't know. I grouse about it because I think sometimes, you know, anytime they do get anything interesting on the menus, they don't last. You know, they go away. I notice even at Backlot, the buffalo chicken sandwich isn't there anymore. You can get buffalo chicken nuggets, but not the sandwich anymore. Well, before we go away completely from our dining values and rant about Hollywood Studios some more, I do want to take a minute. You know, there's very little variation anymore in snack pricing at Walt Disney World. I think that that's largely a function of the dining plan because, you know, with snacks on the dining plan, there's this effort to kind of, you know, keep all of the options within the dining plan within a fairly narrow price range. And I think that that shows up more in snacks than anywhere else. But I think there are still some values to be found. So anybody have a favorite snack value?
You want to jump in on this one first, Eric?
I don't really. I'm afraid I don't have really good snack values. I know that, you know, when I'm there for Food and Wine, they have the pumpkin spice funnel cakes over in Epcot that I am powerless to resist, but they are a couple dollars more than the usual funnel cakes you get over there. So I am apparently willing to pay a premium.
Well, but there's a good example though of a place where you can get good value out of the dining plan. And that is during Food and Wine, you know, many of those samples are available for a snack credit.
And they also have those, I don't know if you've had these, Eric, the roasted, the sugar-coated roasted almonds that they have over by the Land Pavilion. I don't know if they have them all the time, but I know they, when they do, they're great. You guys know, either of you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, we got some.
Talking about, I haven't had them there though.
Yeah, I was going to say we got some in the Magic Kingdom just this last trip. They have them at the cart there on Main Street.
Oh, we'll say, sorry, going back to the Sleepy Hollow, we talked about the waffle sandwiches there before, but they've got the cookie ice cream sandwich that is, as I've said before on this podcast, the size of a small child. That's a lot of cookies and ice cream for your snack credit or for your $4 or so.
Right. I agree. And you know, one of the one thing that jumped out to me as a value, and it's more about location than the snack itself. And that is the Dole Whip machine at Captain Cook's, because the pricing for a Dole Whip is identical at Captain Cook's and at Aloha Isle. The difference is that Aloha Isle has a cast member who's trained to weigh out a portion for you. And there's lots of suspicion that those portions have been reduced over the last, you know, year or so. At Captain Cook's, it's, you know, you're going to do that yourself. And you're not so much caught and bound by the portion that is determined for you by the cast member. Let's just put it that way.
Sure, you can get your head under the spigot and just be there for at least
go to town
before anybody tries to kick you out of the place.
Yeah, you know, like we said before, snacks, there's just not a whole lot of variation there, so it's kind of hard to find value. I mean, everybody's got their favorites. I think that a small caramel corn from Caramel Cooch is a good deal in Epcot because I like caramel corn. But the reality is that it's the same $5 that, you know, two-thirds of the other snacks are. It's really to each their own. So you've heard us ramble about what we think our favorite dining values are. We'd love to hear what you think. You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com, visit our blog, dizdads.com, tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter, and participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. We'd love to have you as part of the community. Until next time, I've been Aaron Rittmaster, and I was on the podcast tonight with Chris Carroll, who we appear to have lost to a technical difficulty, and Eric Anderson.
Good night, everybody.
Until next time.
Brought to you by Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Let us help you put together your next magical Disney vacation. Find us at fairytalejourneys.com. Let us sweat the details so you don't have to.